convene the hearing. Just carrying on from the discussion with Kevin Commissioner Munro before lunch, and sort of obtusely referred to page 24 of your section 42A report.
Page 24?
Yes. And paragraph 11.17, you say, single residential dwelling in the low-density residential. Have you considered whether that continues to apply if the standards for bulk and location are not complied with?
Say, for example, if it reverted to a full discretionary or non-compliant activity?
Well, there are submissions seeking that those be restricted discretionary, so we have to work on that. We have to look at all the options. If they were restricted discretionary, and there are some that are restricted discretionary, do you think that your view there would equally apply to where the bottom location controls were not being met?
It really just comes down to the type of what bulk and location requirements are being infringed.
Okay. If you have a look at rule 8.5.7, which is in the medium density zone, which list length as recommended be a restricted discretionary activity. That doesn't reference the Arrowtown design guidelines in Arrowtown, does it?
No, it doesn't.
But we had a discussion with Mr. Lott about the landscaping in the front yard being an important issue. So that's one example.
It is it's a good example.
And if you consider the other matters that are listed there, both in that zone and the low density residential, where the non-compliance is listed as non-complying or discretionary, and think about whether in other district plans that is what they normally are. And I'm thinking of things such as recession plans and setbacks from boundaries, which in most parts of the country are restricted discretionary. Whether in those instances the Arrowtown design guidelines would be appropriate to be applied on this in Arrowtown.
I mean, I think that would be wholly appropriate, yes. A case in point is the maximum building provisions at 8.5.4, which is discretionary. But increasing the coverage of your site has the potential to really start to impact on heritage values if you're located closer to that old town area. Mm. So I guess it comes back to...
But if you're in the transitional zone, you would be restricted discretionary in any case.
In the high density, that's right, yes.
In the medium density, yes.
Medium density, sorry, yes.
Well, do you think it would be helpful if you could give us your opinion in the reply as to which rules in those two zones that might be applicable to reference the Arrowtown design guidelines if we, as a result of our hearings in the residential stream, determine that they should be restricted discretionary. And there are a number of the sort, and there were submissions seeking that the height, for instance, in the medium density residential had a two-stage process with part of it restricted discretionary and part of it non-compliant. So there are a range of options that we have to consider. And I think it would be valuable if you could give us your advice on that. The other question relates to the maps again, and it's just something that struck me while we were, well, Commissioner Munro was asking questions. If you look at Plan 5 on page 21, along Orchard Street, it has significant kitchens listed on the north side of Orchard Street and none on the south side, which is the reserve. Do you think those should correlate with hedges that are listed in the protected tree sections?
Yes, they should.
Could I ask you then to examine that? Because from memory, from the hearing, the submissions on that, the hedges along the reserve are protected, and some on the north side of Butcher, but not the ones that are shown. And there might be some inconsistencies, I think, right through all those maps that need to be checked. Because I wouldn't want, if we were to accept that the design guidelines were appropriately concluded, I wouldn't like them to have inconsistencies that threw their veracity into doubt.
Yes. Well, in terms of the significant vegetation that's identified on these neighbourhood plans, that's significant vegetation not identified as being protected. So this is the 2006 guidelines carrying through. So
right,
there needs to be some update there to reflect the direction that the proposed district plan is taking in relation to that chapter.
Mm. Well, and it may be that the distinction needs to be drawn between protected ones and other significant ones. And the same with trees.
Correct.
Mm.
I suspect there's quite an undertaking to update those drawings.
Yes.
To look at that. So
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Cazan, do you have any other questions?
Yes.
Just a small one. What's the project title of the here? It says that a hedge is to be planted in the street boundary. And so the hedge is to be planted. So that's a definite.
Hedge must
It's the fifth last sheet. There's no checker on the checklist.
Sorry, Commissioner, so what was the question?
The question was, if 5 and 9 Newtown road into residential and proposed medium residential, one of the things on the checklist, something looking through here,
do something with the property there. The fifth last thing on the list,
yes,
on the back page says for the street boundary, inside boundary, hedges to be planted.
Yes.
So,
or the secondary preference of the fence style and material from the schedule list. So a hedge is the first preference for boundary planting, or alternatively a fence.
Perhaps the difference say,
okay,
first preference, second preference.
Yes.
It needs something.
Yes.
No, I was reading that, I was saying, yeah, I've got to get a hedge around this place.
Mm. That is a bit sloppy and not particularly helpful, so. Mm.
Okay. We just need to roll it with the sort out.
Well, I think
Mr. Price has raised an obvious point that a number of the matters we've raised could require some time to have altered in the guidelines, particularly the maps. The other matter is that we would like the reply by Friday. It seems to me sensible that that those sort of changes to the guidelines would give you leave to have longer to deal with that. We would rather the reply deal with the big issues rather than my UTI. And I know that Friday is only 4 days, but then there are only five people we're hearing from this afternoon that you need to respond to apart from our questions. And the resolution. And if we said, I understand that, the mapping work will take some time, and I'd be happy to say until, the end of December, or the end of the working year, if you like, as appropriate.
Mm. What I propose we do is we indicate the changes that have been made in the written reply, and then the actual
political
changes will follow.
Yes.
Just an updated version of the
guidelines. That would be fine. So I think it would be harsh to say we want to see all your changes. And I think even in terms of indicating the changes, if that means only in a broad sense, that's fine.
Thank you.
Can I speak to last questions?
Yes.
Commissioner Munro hasn't quite worked out six questions, yeah?
there were two things that I just wanted to get your opinion on, Mr. Bryce. The first came from my reading of 4.6.1.1b and c on page 104. And I just wanted to check with you, what's your understanding of how demolition activities are dealt with in the residential zones?
So this is 4.6.1.
4.6.1.1,
yes.
B and C. They're talking about the removal of fabric and removal of clearing the site. And I just wanted to understand what activity status would apply if I bought a site and I just wanted to demolish what was there.
I would have to check the Arrowtown residential strike management zone provisions, but I'm pretty sure that the rule framework would govern demolition.
Yeah, I didn't see it in any of the residential zones, which makes me wonder whether it becomes a non-compliant activity caused by the catch-all, which seems a bit unusual, or whether it's included in the definition of something. But I didn't see demolition. Happy for it to be something that can come in through the reply, just a clarification of,
okay.
Because the guidelines says you shouldn't do it, and the absence of a rule that in any way stops people doing it, it might be a bit anomalous.
wouldn't capture any listed buildings that would be subject to their own scheduling of protection, but I'm talking now just about a general house on a site in that zone that's not subject to any other requirements.
Yes, well, Rule 10.4.4, this is in relation to the Old Town area, deals with construction or alteration of any buildings.
Yeah, but there was a case in Devonport where someone took a heritage house and demolished everything except one internal wall, and that was found that it wasn't demolition, because demolition meant full demolition.
Mm.
And in that case, saving one wall meant it was an alteration. So I just want to understand how the plans actually approach demolition.
Yes, I'll have a look at that.
Yeah, just clarify that, because
discuss with the 42A officer.
And the related question to that is that in Section 10, it's interesting because it's the only one of the residential zones where there's an actual activity status for alterations.
Yes.
And I'm thinking it must be that in a permitted instance of one house per site, as long as you comply with the rules, additions and alterations would come under the permitted activity status for dwelling. But I'm thinking of the proposed overlay in the medium density zone proposed by Ms. Lee, whether that would actually mean people can't actually do additions and alterations without needing consent to. And if that's intended, whether that's sufficiently clear in the plan. So the plan talks about predominantly the construction of new dwellings. So again, it's just a question of clarification. I'm sure there's a rationale for it, but it's not completely clear. As we see in Section 10, the activity status talks about construction or alteration.
Yes.
But there's no reference to alteration in any of the other residential zones in their activity tables.
Yes, in most instances the trigger for the guidelines to be considered is the density rules.
Yeah, so again, if there's a sense that I could take a charming, beautiful house that's consistent with the guideline and do all sorts of alterations to it. That might not be something that's desirable.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, those are just two questions of clarification. I'm happy for that to come in through the reply of the officer. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's all.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify the timing of the reply, we'll be able to get the error term design and the design guidelines for planning by Friday. We were working towards this Monday for the other residential chapters.
That's over
10
working days.
Yes, well, we have clarified this a number of times to the council to come to that date.
I'm afraid no one asked us. We actually changed our deliberation days to Monday and Tuesday this week. To fill in with Commissioner Munro, who has a hearing on Wednesday. And obviously, no one communicated that through to you. And I presumed, given that we'd had such a long break, that the residential ones would be pretty much complete anyway.
Okay, I understood that
being
part of what you My apologies for that assumption. Okay, I'll go back to the planners and pass that on. But, and also to my staff that they won't be taking questions from you to them. Okay, so it's your Monday, Tuesday, is it?
Yes. Right. I don't mind as long as we get them so that we can work on them over the weekend. I'm not expecting them to be delivered so that we can work on them on Friday. Just so that Ms. Chalmers can email them all to us on a Friday afternoon. It's the most important from our point of view.
Okay, thank you. Let's do what we can. So that brings the council's opening to with your leave, can I be excused?
Yes.
For the rest of the afternoon.
Just one other question. Aside from this, you recall when you opened the residential, I raised with you whether you'd be advising the panel how we should deal with the council's resolutions and what's in and out of the plan. Is that supposed to be dealt with in writing?
Yes, it is, and my apologies haven't been filed yet. I would have promised this week, but I'm not going to anymore.
No, I'm busy this week now.
So next week, and we did speak about answering any questions you have on that, so I do propose it might be the business hearing, it might be a better time to do that.
Yes. Well, or if you can file them in writing, and then we can look at whether that is what we do, or whether we just pass for submitters' comments and then come to some conclusion. It probably depends on what they say, I suppose.
Yes. But I'd have
to find
the
day. Okay. Thank you. Yes,
thank you.
And yes, we're free to go back to
yes. Thank you very much for hearing us. I'm representing myself, my husband, Mr. Murray Hannon, and Mr. Judith Hannon, who has a property in Arrowtown itself, as well as separate from our property. She's at number 69 Westfield Road, and our property is at 82. Firstly, a comment on the consultation process, with each section having to be processed separately, and I think this is something that it's very time consuming, difficult to fill out properly. And Judith Hannon outlined this in her written submission. She emphasises that the consultation fails to meet the spirit and intent requirements of the New Zealand government. This common with pure DC, we found this in the past too. And she said also she worked with the State Services Commission and the Department of Internal Affairs in Lincoln, and she's helped to put in place the requirements for the consultation. So we hope that the QLGC in future consultations does follow the care and user-friendly guidelines. Anyway, the purpose of the Arrowtown Design Guidelines. It's important to cover the whole of Arrowtown with a focus on the well-recognised historic centre and early residential area. Some form of cohesiveness with the new Arrowtown is essential. People living and buying into Arrowtown need to have certainty to retain the special and historic character. Private and public land both play a major role in contributing to these qualities. As Judith Hannah noted in her submission, extra houses should not be considered without a proper relationship to the overall infrastructure in a broad sense, not only for the contiguous area but the overall district. This district is reliant economically on tourism, and if there's little than dull conformity of the buildings offered, the advantage of the difference is lost, something that Arrowtown must value. Developments in the rural area beyond the overgrowth boundary must be avoided to retain the rural area. the scenic beauty and the mountain backdrop. The wide number of appeals against the proposed district plan to change the rurality to residential type zones right next door to Arrowtown is to do away with this and devalue the very appeal of the district. Once the site is urbanised, it cannot be undone. McDowell Road must be retained as the urban boundary with the rural zone on one side and parking not permitted on that side of the road by residents on the other side. If you go along there today, you'll find that there's a lot of parking on the wrong side of the road, upwards and downwards and all over the place. To the town centre in Old Town and New Town post 1950, in 1.2 planning, a support reference to the Arrowtown design guidelines as specified in the urban development, Arrowtown residential historic management zone and low density and medium density. We all have responsibility to protect the historic character and appropriate development for Arrowtown. Low key, small scale from its past is vital for values and character. As noted, tourism is important now and the key to economy, but Arrowtown is also a place to live and a holiday destination. If development is allowed to go rampant, the very essence of people value will be lost forever. Map 19 needs to show the extended boundary of McDonnell Road as defined by 1989, and I think that map is not quite right in your plans. The actual development of this section is yet to be determined. There must be a requirement for this area to follow the ADG, as this is the gateway to Arrowtown, and is an extension of the housing along McDonnell Road. So, neighbourhood 12, and we're particularly interested in that one, noted that McDonnell Road does not connect well with Arrowtown, yet it is the start of the village. The residences are mainly occupied by families, and the road is used for walking, recreation activities, horse riding, but also tourist uses. It is increasingly used as a bypass by many trucks, tourist buses, and other vehicles. With the Arrowtown retirement village at the other end of McDonnell Road and the volume of cars from there, it is increasingly going to be heavy with traffic, making the exit on Medicus Road and Lakehead Road a real hazard. The threats to this road are real. The urban edge defined by the road must be protected and housing not allowed to spill over into the rural zone. The walkways giving access from McDonnell Road to Cotter Avenue needs to be protected, well maintained and identified with signage. Sometimes it's difficult to actually find where they are. The Arrowtown Design Guide should apply to this neighbourhood of McDonnell Road to give a cohesive whole to the village. Under 3.1, the whole town and its setting therefore needs to be considered as an entity when any type of change is proposed with any of its neighbourhoods. Character protection and conservation are essential principles that must be applied. The town centre should not be allowed to expand beyond its current boundaries. Localised shopping as a present, not destination shopping. The shopping centre currently supports independent, high-end local boutique businesses and products. There are also plenty of other large destination shopping areas in the district now with no character or distinctive appeal and dominated by national chains. We certainly do not want that in our town centre at Arrowtown. The town centre is a heritage precinct in the process of plan, and heritage conservation should guide all change and intervention if we want to preserve Arrowtown's distinct and unique qualities valued by all those who live and visit. We support the guidelines of Buckingham Street, Renshaw and Arrowlands. When considering lighting, the character lighting is suggested, but downlighting is used and designed to retain the dark night sky is important and to prevent light pollution. Any form of pollution, I think, is something we need to be wary of. We support the concept of open public open spaces and surfaces using low-key materials which reflect the traditional Arrowtown. Also to encourage plantings to support a more sympathetic blending of areas and surroundings. Parking proposals are good and parking should not be extended beyond what is there now. I think in peak times it's quite in order to park all around the place as it has been when they've had a major event on. Fencing needs to be appropriate, and we especially note 3.9.1e, and I think already we're seeing high fencing being put in places where it's not appropriate, and that needs to be enforced. Likewise, street search needs to be considered carefully. Now, the enforcement of the guidelines. It's important that with the proposed increased density that the Arrowtown design guidelines need to be enforced to protect the values and character and give an effective design response. It's absolutely important that the Arrowtown urban growth boundary is not burst broken, eroded or ignored, and that rurality is maintained beyond the urban growth boundary. And the area town design guideline must be incorporated by reference into the district plan. We certainly support that. The purpose to ensure the future development is of a scale and design sympathetic to the present character. Under 4.2.7, the objective to manage the scale and location of urban growth within the urban growth boundaries is supported. It's noted that goals and objectives are met by creating efficiencies in the administration of the district plan and reducing costs for the community. However, I have grave doubts of the need, value and meaning of the district plan when you consider the outright erosion that has been allowed in the affordable housing retirement villages that have been promoted and approved by the council, signed off the minister, changing rural zones to residential, completely overriding the plan. The Arrowtown retirement village is a case in point. There is actually no supply of affordable housing and only be benefits to developers of the sale, a village. Sale of houses in Arrowtown by people who may move into the village will not be in the affordable range, but at market value. The whole district needs to be considered actually up as an extra and affordable possibility, not focusing on Arrowtown. I doubt that Arrowtown can really be regarded as the place where affordable housing is going to be. There's plenty of other places in the village, in the district, where affordable housing can be. So, are the guidelines and the plan worthless? That's a big question. There needs to be a change in its enforcement to at least adhere to what has been approved through community consultation and a plan which can be relied upon. The proposed district plan should not succumb to the waves and attacks of developers and capital gainers. And policy enforcement and upholding the proposed district plan is paramount. If the Arrowtown design guidelines are going into the plan, it's absolutely paramount that this be adhered to. To address the issues, option two, which is one of the ones that looked at, to better respond to the proposed MDR zone that forms part of the proposed district plan, promoted as a keystone to promote greater housing choice, help reduce pressure for urban development adjacent to or close to the Arrowtown urban growth boundary. Now that the Arrowtown design guidelines 2016 are formally referenced in the proposed district plan, it's important that the changes proposed are incorporated to give guidance, especially for the area adjacent to the Arrowtown RHMS zone. The community needs to be able to rely on adherence to the proposed district plan and not allow a random attack by developers without the proper process of change being followed. Heritage conservation should guide all change and intervention if we want to preserve Arrowtown's distinct and unique qualities valued by all who live and visit there. It's the Arrowtown is the jewel of the Wakatia Basin and not a dormitory suburb of Queenstown. And there's one correction, and I'm not sure, I couldn't find it. Correction plan 2, Green 15, is not Beaudrill Park.
That's been corrected.
It's been corrected, thank you, that's good. Because I thought that was, shows that I actually did read the whole thing through. Thank you very much for your time.
Just two questions, thank you. My first question is whether or not you would see the guidelines referenced in the plan, I've got that,
yep.
But do you see those as forming matters that must be addressed and taken into account, akin to a form of requirement, or do you see the guidelines as being a range of important matters that need to be considered on a case-by-case basis, but maybe not always adhered to? Which of those two do you think the guidelines should be?
My view would be that the guidelines should be adhered to. What's the point in having them if you don't adhere to them? And there may be modifications that need to be made, but they should be adhered to. Otherwise, why bother with all this consultation and expense and all the rest of it that we're doing right now?
My second question is, the council's current proposal is that in many cases in the low density residential zone or medium density residential zone, a single house on a single site would be a permitted activity with no need to consider the guidelines at all. Do you think they should apply on every single site in Arrowtown?
I do.
Thank you.
side.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Now, this part of the
I do not object to the incorporation of the Aotearoa Design Guidelines, ADG, as proposed as the plan, TDP, but I question the timing. The submission date on Variation 1 may have been extended to 17th of August 2016, but the information contained in the ADG also relates to previous chapters of the proposed district plan, which have already been presented through the hearing process and cannot be considered in retrospect. For example, I made a submission which closed in October 2015, from the proposed scheduling of Tree 1002, a Western Reserve. At that stage, the ADG was a standalone document and had no bearing on the proposed district plan. Now that the intention is to incorporate the ADG and the district plan, I would like to draw attention to the sections of the ADG that include the tree in question. Arajupa, 22 Wiltshire Street, and class of the ADG as Neighbourhood 1, refer attachment 1, page 20 of ADG 2016, part 1. Although our tree is included in the established tall trees and vegetation of Neighbourhood 1, it is also an entirely inappropriate tree for its current location, as determined in the table of structure trees planted. Refer attachment 2, pages 148 and 151 of the ADG 2016, part 2. As quoted in section 4.17, in a quote, appropriate tree and plant species contribute in a positive way. Similarly, inappropriate species have a negative effect on appearance and character. Refer attachment 3, page 132 of ADG 2016, part 2. This is not the first time the QLDC has introduced information relating to chapters in the proposed district plan months after submissions or no chapters are closed. If it is considered appropriate to incorporate the ADG into the proposed district plan at this late stage, then I request that the evaluation methodology, as outlined in Mr. David Spencer's statement of evidence dated 1 June 2016, be added to the proposed district plan so that the public have an understanding of what qualifies as a significant tree. This should include Figure 1, Full Tree Evaluation Score Sheet, refer Attachment 4, pages 5 and 6 of the statement of evidence of David Spencer dated 1 June 2016. I request this information from the QLDC before submissions closed in October 2015, and it was not provided. I would like to have been given the opportunity to have my own independent arborist assess our tree using the same STEM evaluation scoring system that Mr. Spencer used, but this methodology has only been made available as of 1 June 2016. Why wasn't this information made available to all submitters prior to submissions closing in October 2015? The blanket tree rules in the operative district plan, ODP, were no longer applicable after 4 September 2015 as the Resource Management Act, Simplifying and Streamlining Amendment Act 2009, removed the ability for councils to impose blanket tree protection rules. However, the ADG is applying a blanket rule in section 4.20.1 by using the following guideline: retain and maintain all large trees, hedges and other vegetation that contribute to the character or sense of enclosure of the ARHNZ and the town centre. Refer attachment 5, page 135 of ADG 2016, part 2. This is despite the fact that our tree, and no doubt others, are identified as inappropriate species for that area as referenced in attachment 2. I appreciate the aesthetic value that trees add to Arrowtown landscape and agree that there have to be some measures in place to protect heritage trees. But consideration should also be given to private property owners where the benefits of scheduling the tree are outweighed by the negative impact that the tree is causing.
You'll recall that I was the chairman and we reviewed the last time, and I will ensure that the decision we make is consistent with this and what we heard before. So that all the factors will be taken into account.
Yes, that's some of that information I didn't have before.
Yes, but we have it all now.
Right.
Yes. It's on your property.
It's on the boundary of our property and
Five
Spiritshire Street, I think it is, Sam and David Gent.
Yes, okay.
I have got my previous submission to have got close to it.
Just a couple of questions of the council planner, Mr. Bryce, if that's available. Mr. Bryce, having trees identified in the Arrowtown Residential Design Guideline as important or significant or whatever terminology used in the guideline, that doesn't of itself make those trees protected in terms of the district plan, does it?
No, I don't know. I think there's two issues here. You're dealing with issues relating to a tree which is scheduled in the
proposed
plan versus the Arrowtown Design Guidelines, which seeks to ensure that as much as possible existing vegetation is retained as part of the development proposal. It's not opposing blanket protection at all. It's just that it's part of your consideration that vegetation is retained as much as possible.
So notwithstanding the question of separate scheduling in the plan, if an owner of property in Arrowtown had vegetation that had been identified in the guideline that wasn't subject to any other protections in the plan, would they be free to remove that vegetation?
Correct.
Right. Thank you. That's
so in order to say something, there was significant vegetation on our section that the council actually removed without our permission. And the neighbours.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
There's a fair bit of crossover, and it's just about my wardrobe of hats to wear for my involvement in Arrowtown. Right. Can I just seek clarification on something that Mr. Bryce just said regarding the trees? Is that appropriate?
Put it to me.
I'll put it to you. Thank you. So I wear a couple of submission hats relating to design guidelines here. Excuse me, variation one. First one, Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group. The design guidelines 2006 were ratified by council, as was the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group. That was done in the mid-1990s. The 2006 guidelines, as you'll know, are not statutory documents, but simply remain as guidelines. The advisory group was appointed to act in a similar way to the Queenstown and Monaco urban design panels, etc. We've done the work for free over many years. The design guidelines 2006 resulted from community consultation and have worked extremely well. They've been a valuable tool to vet developments in the Arrowtown heritage zones. The design guidelines have almost universally been supported by planners, architects and professionals that the Arrowtown planning advisory group have worked with. They're generally happy to work in a collaborative way, with a few recent exceptions from architects seeking to make more contemporary statements. There's also been little objection by developers or owners to being to be guided by these rules and ideas and suggestions have come out of the dialogue with the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group, and this is reflected in the results. The use of the guidelines have created cohesive development that respects scale, design and amenities. Other heritage towns in New Zealand have attempted to adopt similar guidelines. Akaroa and Coromandel Town both had me speak about how Arrowtown initiatives like the guidelines have protected heritage character. They are invariably envious of how we've been able to use the guidelines. The Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group supports the ongoing use of the design guidelines in the heritage zones, but also supports the use of guidelines across all of the town as per the 2016 revision. We do not see this as onerous, as it still allows for a variety of architectural styles to be used that reflect a period in time. The most recent community workshop, Shaping Our Future Community Forum 2015, continually identified ahead of all else the character, amenity, heritage and green values of Arrowtown. The intention of the 2006 guidelines was always to try and encourage development of the new town to take a lead from the old town. This progressed under Council of Ex-Perkins, who tried to get the guidelines extended into the new town in the district plan review. And this is where we are now. This has been a slow process, and in some parts of the new town, open slather has been the result. Large McMansions having no connection to the Arrowtown vernacular, the scale and design have resulted. Due to the affordable housing debate, council planner no longer working for council, and several councillors, no longer councillors, pushed for high density zoning in Arrowtown. The public meeting that resulted from this vocally rejected this idea, but council has still promoted it on a slightly reduced scale. The community, especially the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group, said to council if you're going to insist on a new high density zoning that allows for two-storey development, then it needs to come with design controls to ensure setback, view shafts, amenity and character that is preserved. The intent is not to try and make some Victorian faux town in the new town, as some architects have insinuated, but to encourage development that, as I've mentioned, respects the scale, amenity, light and views, use of materials and landscaping. Hence the development of the Design Guidelines 2016 to incorporate what is working well in the old town while assisting development of the new town. As stated in the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group submissions, we were concerned that there is a perception suggesting that the design guidelines were trying to make Arrowtown into a museum and denying people their property rights, and that big family homes could not be built in the heritage zone. This is not the intention, and I only have to remind the hearing that heritage towns such as Arrowtown around the world have far greater restrictions in terms of development rights, and these are restrictions that are enforced. People who buy into Arrowtown do so knowingly, realising there are certain expectations. The guidelines have been very successful, and the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group support their integration across the whole town. Their use has been one of the major reasons for Arrowtown's popularity and prosperity. They're not intended to be onerous, but designed to be flexible and used on a case-by-case basis, and I noticed one of the panels members asked that question, and invariably we're finding more and more as the old holiday house cribs get redeveloped that we're assessing them on a slightly different way in that, and that's come up with some conflict with council. If you own a crib, for instance, and you want to redevelop it as a crib-like structure, then perhaps some of the rules in the district plan and the design guidelines encourage you to do something that's more Victoriana than keeping the intention of a crib. So we are finding ourselves in some conflict there, and I would recommend that each application is assessed on a case-by-case basis. So that's my submission to do with the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group. Happy to take any questions on that.
Given an excellent exhibition on the crib, which was held at the museum I think 2 years ago now, do you see any merit from a heritage point of view in the retention of this type of building?
Given that they were invariably built as summer residences out of boxwood scavenged in Invercargill and Dunedin, then it's understandable that people want to have them for modern use and winter use, but we're talking about rules in the plan that talk about gable forms, and perhaps that many of the cribs had a mono pitch and different materials, so there is some conflict there in terms of what the design guidelines call for. And a recent case is we agreed with a redevelopment of a crib along crib lines, but this has come in conflict with the council, who are slavishly wishing to adhere to the design guideline rules, which talk about the 35 degree pitch and painted weatherboards and some materials that just wouldn't, some of these cribs can't be turned into a faux Victorian villa or a villa style.
So the panel put a recommendation to council, the council didn't accept it.
They're questioning it, yeah. Because we're ours are only recommendations, so it's, the final say is with council.
Okay. So they've come back and said, well, you know, this is in no way reflective of a strict determination of the design guidelines or rules of the plan. So that's an interesting debate we're having at the moment.
That's presumably based on 2006.
Yes.
The 2016, would you end up with the same situation?
You could do it potentially. So whilst we support the intent of the design guidelines, there's just, and invariably, new development will have a more slavish adherence to the design guidelines versus something that's a redevelopment of a crypt.
I asked Mr. Bryce a few questions about this before you were here. It seems to me that in the low density residential zone, you can modify a building as of right without any consideration of the design guidelines.
This is in the new town, not the old town.
Yes.
Yes.
And is that problematic?
Once again, on a case-by-case basis, I think Elizabeth probably alluded to that I would consider that all applications are assessed along the guidelines and without being onerous. You know, if it's as a core 10 steel box with glass appropriate in our town, it may well be. I'm not an architect, but should that be assessed in some way? And who makes that call? If it's going to be as of right, or if it's as of right, no one gets to make the call, do they? So how do you avoid inappropriate development? So I would sooner have it across the whole town, and I think that question was asked before as well. I'm not sure who's going to do that vetting, given that even in the old town, the Arrow Town Planning Advisory Group meet once a week at least.
No, it's the impossibility of in the low density residential zone is obviously.
I think, yes, I mean, at the moment, the Planning Advisory Group is only that, an advisory group, so, you know, whoever makes the final call can choose to accept or ignore our advice. It's often good to have that dialogue for people that are coming into town that have no knowledge of the Arrowtown situation. You know, we always talk about Arrowtown solutions to Arrowtown problems or Arrowtown issues. So someone comes in, buys a section, said it, sure they've got property rights, but I don't know if you could say it's good manners to find out what's gone on in the past in terms of development in the town.
It's providing good manners at present.
Pardon?
It's providing good manners at present.
Questions? I do have some questions, thanks. One of the reasons given to us by the council in support of the proposed permitted activity status for single houses in the low density and medium density zone was feedback from the council's monitoring saying that it's more or less working and there's not really a problem. In terms of your preference that the guide apply everywhere, do you have a different view than the council in terms of what's currently happening in those zones in Newtown?
Yeah, I do. Up behind the school area, houses built on ridges, prominent positions, huge houses built from, you know, with no side yards, just the same sort of situation you would have in any subdivision in town, and that's changed the character of that part of town.
For the sake of a possibility, not suggesting it's on our plan of things to do, but if we wanted to take a quick trip out to Arrowtown to see for ourselves some of the recent developments that might or might not be suitable, would you be able to give us, without dropping any of your neighbours into it or anything, any particular addresses we might want to look at?
Yes, I think I could. I think one of the writers of the original 2006 design guidelines described as you arrived from the Lake Hayes Road and looking across that escarpment that you viewed a row of houses like a row of broken teeth. And part of Arrowtown's charm is that
has in town that you all, that you pop into as you come into the town, and I think a lot of that's been destroyed by development that hasn't been sensitive across that ridge line, especially.
Okay. There are sort of three broad ways of dealing with historic heritage. One is the absolute repeat and replicate, which is criticised because it's hard to find old materials and old construction techniques and old costs. The middle ground, which is what's proposed, which is the contemporary but sympathetic and a sort of compromise halfway house. And the third is the dramatic juxtaposition of something totally different. And invariably you find an architect willing to say any one of those three is the right thing to do to suit their vision. And that's not a criticism, it's just a recognition that there isn't always one fair answer. It's pretty clear in Arrowtown that the preferred response is that middle ground. Are you able to give me a bit of background on the history of why that's the right thing to do, as opposed to, for instance, ring fencing the old town and promoting something completely different around it?
Yeah, I think you're right. The middle ground is the one. I think early dialogue, and I think it's in the present district plan, talks about respecting the past but not necessarily mimicking it. And I think people like it was a good column in the ABC today from Peter Entwistle, and he mentioned the Arrowtown Library, for example, is a good example of Michael Wyatt's reference to the past but not necessarily mimicking it. And I think the council in the mid-1970s were very forward-thinking in giving the zones for a start, and then within those zones they obviously had a collection of Victorian and Edwardian buildings. So in that era, a lot of New Zealand towns were getting ripped down and pretty horrible facades stuck on the front of genuine heritage buildings. You see that in towns all around New Zealand. So I think in an effort to try and stop that, they went down the line more of facadism. And I think in terms of Arrowtown, facadism has actually worked quite well, but it's not slavish facadism. You can still pick the old and the genuine buildings. I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear here, but I think what's transpired is the middle ground. What was intended was probably more slavish. And I think the middle ground is the better way to go.
What I'm hearing you say is that whatever's happened, it's worked.
Yes,
and
it's more about scale, material, setbacks, vegetation, a whole myriad of things.
I hope you don't mind me putting you on the spot a bit here, but I think it would help me understand how you see the guidelines. And I'm going to ask you a question about something I saw in the ODP last time I was here about a leaf building. Now, I'm not involved in that in any way, and I've got no interest in it, but that seems to be a pretty contemporary building. Do you see taking the guidelines, updating them from the 2006 version, bringing them more into the scheme of the district plan, do you see that as likely to help facilitate the kind of application of those quite contemporary type buildings, or do you see it more about limiting or preventing them?
Hopefully limiting and preventing them.
And that's just, again, so I can understand how you see the guidelines would work, but using a real world example. Oh, thanks for that. Look, my last question is just to confirm what I think you've said, and that is, you talked about those periphery developments and how that's an example of something that might conflict a bit with the guideline. One response could be, in a 180-page guideline, how is it possible that that's not already provided for as an explicit thing? But another response is that the council's proposal is that these should stay as a guideline, that are used for reference but aren't intended to be fixed. Thou must.
Mm.
Your primary development example would seem to fall into agreement with the council's view that the guide should be a guide that's the basis for a negotiation, not the fixed solution that has to be adhered to. Have I heard you right?
Yeah, probably. I think at the moment they don't have any statutory weight at all, but I think they need to be something that must be included in other matters, so they become part of the assessment and have got some teeth. But I don't think they should be necessarily slavish to the point of saying, no, can't do that. Because my experience is that we've got some really good solutions from dialogue, and architects and developers and property owners all come out of it saying, well, actually, we ended up with a better building than we even thought we were going to have.
Okay, thanks for those answers.
So you just one last one. Special group had anything to do with the landmarks, stone wood, stone reed type organisations?
No. I don't think there's been any sort of those mass building type developers building in the houses in that part of Arrowtown.
So here in Street. Is that in Gardens
and Oh, Gardens, that's probably the first one I've heard of. In terms of, so, that's okay.
Yes.
Can I put my other hat on, which is basically, it's just slightly repetitive, actually, and you probably already gleaned what. So, coming from my own perspective, I support the Arrowtown Design Guidelines and the intent. I've been involved in civic affairs in Arrowtown since 1989, both privately as the Museum Director, as a councillor, and as member of the Arrowtown Planning Advisory Group. I first holidayed in Arrowtown in the mid-1960s. I've given hundreds of hours, voluntary hours, to ensuring Arrowtown retains its unique character, and that involves protecting its heritage values, its green spaces and built form. I've continued to try and carry out the work started by an enlightened Arrowtown Borough Council in the 1970s that recognised Arrowtown had a special character and warranted protection, not just for the local population, but for the now 600,000 visitors we get each year. Community planning workshops in 1994, 2003, 2015 have consistently reinforced the same message that the characteristics that are held dear by residents and visitors and make Arrowtown special should be protected. It is in my view that we should ensure new development is respectful in terms of scale, amenity and materials. I fear that what has been built in some parts of the new town indicates that the horse is already bolted, with building on prominent bridges, large houses or architectural statement houses being built that take no reference from earlier development of the Arrowtown vernacular. The guidelines of 2006 have been successful in doing this in the heritage zones, or largely successful. And the 2016 rewrite attempts to incorporate all of the town, especially the areas identified as mid-density. Personally, I'm not a fan of the proposed mid-density zone. I think there is a better case for intensification on a case-by-case rather than some blanket zoning approach that could lead to bland apartment-style development, negative impacts on streetscape and neighbourhoods, and problems with infrastructure. In saying that, the Design Guidelines 2016 do make some attempts to suggest how to redevelop in this mid-density zone. Generally, people are supportive in Arrowtown and are on the same page. They recognise Arrowtown has a fragile environment under immense pressure. This has been borne out in the findings of those community workshops. However, I do accept that to some residents I'm a history nut, a do-gooder or an interferer, and that people should be allowed to do as they like, and that the design guidelines will hinder development and deny younger people affordable houses. I accept that affordability is clearly an issue, but I do not think denigrating a very special town by bad or unsympathetic development or going into ribbon development is in anyone's interest or will lead to any affordable development. The Design Guidelines 2016 Variation 1 will help avoid this happening. So that concludes my submission. No further questions?
I think we'll probably ask you all the questions.
It's a bit repetitive.
Thank you, Mr. Frank.
Okay.
At least it's consistent.
Yeah, consistently repetitive.
No, Mr. Kramer.
Well, you'll forgive me if I add a little bit. I've done notes as we've gone through.
That's fine.
Mr. Munro, Commissioner Munro, pardon me, has answered, well, hit the nail on the head with a lot of the concerns and questions I had. I should state that I definitely think that the Arrowtown Design Guidelines should be incorporated in the plan. I question how robust they are. I wonder if they will stand a challenge, particularly perhaps similar treatment, which is something that's come up before, I think, in a case in Canterbury where a developer points to the building next door and says, they've done it there, I want to do it here. Given that when we had the strategies, committee, they, as soon as they were presented with any sort of challenge, particularly if it involved any money, they folded up like a warehouse deck chair, quite frankly. So I wonder what the situation would be if the developer sets aside a certain amount to challenge any problems with this development with a view to actually fighting it or taking it through to the next stage or whatever. Given that the urban design group's not a statutory body, and quite frankly, we could go through that entire process at the moment and they just say, no, we're not interested, we're not going to worry about that, we'll just go ahead with what we want. So I wonder about that, I don't know exactly. The single building's been interesting. Now, this has been brought up by Mr. Munro, Commissioner Munro, as a single house. I don't think it is a single house, I think it's a single building, which would mean that you could have two dwellings or even more, and it hasn't been incorporated in the and need to have any design controls or even consultation put over it. And this is particularly important given that in the PDP, although I did miss the hearings unfortunately, it was recommended that the restricted building lengths be done away with, which was 16 metres. Once it reached 16 metres, I understand you had to break it up a little bit with varying materials and heights and other such things. Right, now neighbourhood 6, there's a little bit of ambiguity in there. You'll see that it's actually listed in the Parrytown Design Guidelines maps, particularly the lower part of Criterion Street, in between Ford and Boundary, has been in the old town, or well, suggested it was in the old town. However, new dwellings have gone ahead there and the urban design group were never consulted. In fact, the building that went there now exceeds the site coverage, site length, and encroaches into the site setback, has a flat roof and a glass balustrated deck. So I would suggest that's about as far removed from what we wanted to see as you possibly could get. It also suggests that in certain instances the current guidelines aren't working that well. There's another contemporary house on the corner of 4th Street, which Mr. Clark slightly alluded to, where it almost became a little bit too difficult to make the architect that designed and built it follow any sort of enforcement. So it was just almost decided it might be better just let it go than actually push it too far. So that was just that. Now the other problem, I think, because of the high sections, because of the small section size, height is going to be a significant issue. They're talking if 500 square metres divided into two sections of 250 each, obviously, in order to make the most out of that sort of size section, I would suggest that you have to go up, particularly given the land value there, which is in excess of $2,000 a square metre now. I was never a fan of the change in the recession claim. I thought that was ridiculous when it was suggested. There was a far better solution, approach it with a pallet knife as opposed to a shotgun, individual assessment, small granny flats, Fonzie units, and this cuts into the affordability. That's out now. Don't even consider affordability in Arrowtown to do with any decision you make here. That ship has sailed, it is gone. The houses in this medium density area are now $1 million plus for 500 square metres, and even with a major adjustment, they're not going to go much below that, in my opinion. Any developer that steps in, that's mad enough to step in, purchase one of these sections, divide it into two parts, it gives them a section, $250,000 for 250 square metres, spend $2,500 a square metre developing a dwelling on it, 100 square metres, there's another $250,000. We're up to $750,000 for a 100 square metre dwelling. And that hasn't taken a profit, hasn't paid a reserves contribution, hasn't done anything, hasn't even paid tax on it. So that's gone, that affordability's gone. Unless, of course, the commissioners, you decide that you don't want to see that sort of development, and we're far better off promoting the smaller little garages and things turned into smaller dwellings, perhaps, I don't know. Anyway, that's pretty much all I've got to say. Everything else from Commissioner Munro. Although he did seem to lean a little bit more left than me in regards to the development, worrying a little bit too much about what the poor old developer might happen to the poor old developer. I'm more worried about what might happen to the poor old resident, quite frankly. If a developer takes it to the end and pushes this sort of the ambiguity that perhaps surrounds the particularly that single building on a site, he's more inclined to inconvenience the existing dwellings around there. I must point out too, I don't know if it's been mentioned before, but a lot of these houses were built when there were no requirements for side setbacks. My own, in fact, encroaches 1.5 metres into the side setback in one corner. We built in 1958. So quite often you'll get a situation where if these large developments go in next door, these neighbours are going to be significantly entranced. And that's not necessarily something that the urban design group can do anything about, but they may be able to suggest ways of mitigating that. I don't particularly want to see a situation where the bureaucrats get to make up their mind what, in its entirety anyway, what goes where, because they've got enough on their plates that, quite frankly, sometimes they're not very good at it. That means the right. You know what I mean? Well, they don't go and see, do they? They just don't know. And if you don't ask, you can't find out. Anyway, that's all I've pretty much got to say.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Tom.
Thank you. No, I have Mr. Blakely listed next, but I don't see him in the room.
He is coming, because I've talked
to him. Well, in that case, we can hear from the fire service now, Mr. McCrae.
You could do. We are waiting for Mr. McIntosh, but we can start here.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, just if you prefer, just check.
Sure, I'll put my hand up yours.
Is Mr. Robertson here? Would you like to be heard now, sir? We'll hear Mr. Robertson first.
First of all, I'd like to thank you to all the staff, for the very thorough meeting, good meeting that was held in Church Hall, St. John's Church Hall. I think, I'm just surmising, but I think there were so few submissions that there was probably general agreement with most of what was in the plan. I think that's really good because I'm older now, and my experience is that there are bandwagons, and at the moment places like Arrowtown or Naseby don't quite fit in with bandwagons of what is appropriate, you know. And it's great that they're being looked at sympathetically as mining towns, as a very few examples of a very important part. So I think it's great what they've done. Now, the two bits that I've submitted on, I see them first than the other, which is fine. Where Mance Road, the first one, the strip traffic in Surrey Street, where Mance Road becomes Carnarvon Street, I'm not an expert on everything, but I'm quite an expert because I live less than 100 yards away from the corner of Surrey Street. There's a kindergarten there on one side, and then there's the proposed new subdivision of the Cleary family, which is not a nice discussion today because it's another matter, but it will potentially be a major factor. Now, where the two cross there, Carnarvon Street and Surrey Street, is actually quite a dangerous corner. People come. There are three main routes into Arrowtown, as I'm probably boring you with, but one of them is not so well known, although it's becoming very busy, and that's the Manus Road, Carnarvon Street, hump of the hill at the cemetery. And it's interesting, but quite frightening at times if you're trying to cross over that corner, watching the utes and various things doing little pig jumps over the top of the hill, even though there are there's a balancing thing on Manus Road, and there's one further down Carnarvon Street, but they quite often jump over the hill, they, you know, pig jumps or kangaroo jumps, and then they come down and whoosh, they come left at that corner of Surrey Street, because, and funnily enough, it's not visitors, it's usually locals or people who know the area, but it's an interesting little quiet way of getting into Arrowtown, but they speed down there, and there they meet the other new development. I'm very sympathetic to the Chinese because I have a Chinese daughter-in-law, but there are simply hundreds and hundreds of mainland Chinese coming up from the village up the walkway, which is over the course of a week, say. And they're a bit perplexed. I mean, they're driving on the other side of the road and they come up there, and it's actually not a good thing for people to come zooming down, even at 50 kilometres an hour, but sometimes a bit more, round the corner to the left in Surrey Street, and then they meet the top of the walkway, they turn around the corner. In fact, it's the route of the trolley derby, so it suits exactly that type of which will, I was certainly capable of, young person and young man, and still goes on. So I think there should be some protection safety is the issue, and safety of children from kindergarten, safety of people crossing the road by the kindergarten, and safety of the pedestrians and, if you like, cyclists as well, coming up, which is very much a tourist route. So that was my first submission. And the thing is, this is over to the road engineers, and I'm sure it will be under discussion with questions of subdivision, but there are simple ways, and I'm not saying cheap in that sense, but things that don't cost too much aren't normally a problem for councils, and it would be relatively easy to find ways of helping there. One would be no left turn into Surrey Street from above, but better probably to have bollards or something placed at the road engineers in consultation with the residents, and also in consultation with whatever happens with the subdivision, because a new subdivision normally would be on a sort of a cul-de-sac. Carnarvon Street is busy, and there's no harm in an entrance to the Cleary subdivision from Carnarvon Street, or I suppose from Surrey Street, but there must be some way of making it safer, and that's over to the road engineers, and it's not expensive. I hear that the Clearys are wanting 12 sections instead of 8, and so there will be obviously negotiations. So that's my first point, is that quite cheaply, ways could be found to stop people zooming down Surrey Street and past, which I'll come to the second one, the nice Reed Haven, which now belongs to Clearys, and I understand that they are, in any negotiations on subdivision, it's a given, I think, or said to be a given, that the old Jack Reed or the Reed family's old house from 1864 will remain in one block. Whoever buys it will have to be one of these multi-millionaires, but there seem to be quite a few of them about, and in fact there are houses in Arrowtown that are owned by people who use them for 2 weeks of the year. So, but it's important that that is also protected. My second submission will show you what I'm talking about. Either as a private residence with the orchard, and I don't know what the acreage is, but either as a private residence, or if the Clearys can be forthcoming, it would make a wonderful park. Now that's my second submission, which is to talk to the Cleary family into turning the wonderful old stone home including the orchard, into Eamon Cleary Park. Now, this is pie in the sky, of course. But interestingly, I've been all around the world and I know what Celtic cottage looks like. And actually, I've only seen one in New Zealand that looks like the reed house with chimney both ends. It's slightly different because the dairy's been built on later. And there's a veranda which isn't common in the Hebrides or Ireland. But it is actually a rather important part of our culture as well. It's not mining, but it's early immigration from the Hebrides and Scotland and Ireland, what have you. Now that's my second thing. I think that Eamon Cleary, who's dead of course, but is not, his family or his estate is not ungenerous. You know, they have, they're hard-nosed people and they have a policy of, you know, if they don't get their way, let things run down as happened with the Aerotown cottages. But funnily enough, in that case, the, in fact, in the end, they became commercial. Maybe not as the Clearys would have had it, but the end result was pretty much the same. Now, I'm hoping this man who has given his chair in Celtic studies could be by some good person. I don't know him, I've never met him, but a good person, I don't know the family, it's obviously the family now, and talked into making the name of Cleary Park. But that's pie in the sky. But my first admission, the important one, there's got to be some way of negotiating when the subject of subdivision comes up, and the road engineers, who have a lot of power and good sense, finding some solution to that corner. There are many solutions. The cheapest one would be bollards, so people don't rush around the corner because there's no point. Other ways would be make it only left-hand turns. As a pedestrian, you know, walking up the hill to look at a possible plot in the cemetery, shall we say, which is nice. So it's very dangerous crossing that corner, it really is.
Well, maybe
it's a quick entry, I agree. I haven't got the plot yet.
Although, quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Right, I mean, are there any questions? Or?
No, pretty clear what you were saying.
No,
thank you.
No, I think everyone has said that is a busy route. It's the third main route into Aerotown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Blakely.
Our firm prepared the 2006 Aerotown Design Guidelines, for which I was a lead consultant. Our firm has also been responsible for many project upgrades, design and planning work in the town over a 15-year period, including a town centre upgrade, Ramshaw Lane, post office development, Arrow Lane, Arrow River development plan, and roads up at Douglas Park upgrade. I am a member of the Aerotown Planning Advisory Group, and have been for approximately 7 years. APAC is a voluntary group that reviews all consent applications in the Aerotown Historic Management Zone and provides recommendations to council. I had a formal peer review role in the 2016 guidelines for QLDC. This primarily involved three things: pre-meetings with council and community representatives, preparing a review and comments on the 06 guidelines, which included recommendations on how they could be updated and how to incorporate guidelines for the proposed medium density zone, provide comments on the draft 2016 guidelines. These comments are consistent with comments made in the submission. So, in my submission, I support the proposed 2016 Arrowtown Design Guidelines. I have seen the positive benefit of the 06 guidelines with better outcomes for the Arrowtown Historic Management Zone, not just in consents for private land, but in management of public areas, streets, parks and reserves, and generally just raising awareness of Arrowtown's special character and identity. The 06 guidelines have been less successful, however, in benefits for the new town, and in my view, have only had a minor benefit here. While I support the intent of the 2016 draft guidelines, I request some changes in format and the way they are organised, and also some additional work. I'll just go through step by step. In the first chapter, the first chapters of the revised document, in my view, work well, i.e. the introduction, heritage and character, and the town centre guidelines. And the town centre guidelines being separate, I think, is a good thing. Moving on to the Old Town New Residential Area Guidelines. While I can understand the logic of combining the Old Town and New Town, it has created confusion and importantly has weakened the design guidelines for the Old Town. Chapter 4 seems muddled and confused, and is the result of attempting to cobble together / amalgamate aspects of the 06 guidelines, and as a result doesn't work. Combining the two has also given the perception that cottage buildings and features of the Arrowtown Historic Residential Management Zone are intended across the whole of the town, which is not the case. It can be interpreted that way due to the layout and the way it is presented in the 016 draft. Some of the criticism from the public meeting held earlier this year on the draft guidelines stemmed from the idea that the guidelines were trying to enforce cottage-style buildings in the new residential areas, which resulted in part from the combining of the old and new town residential guidelines, even though it is made very clear in the document that the following the character of the old town is less important further away from the old town boundary. But I still think it creates confusion. Some of the guidelines for the old town are not applicable in the new residential areas, i.e. site planning and design appropriate to the old town is not applicable to the new town and mostly cannot be achieved. For example, spaciousness is a key characteristic of the old town, cannot be achieved, especially for medium density. Similarly, settlement pattern is a characteristic of the old town, which would be difficult to the way that the existing historic settlement pattern is a characteristic of the old town, which would be difficult to incorporate into the new town. Also confusing is that features that are characteristic of the old town, churches and church grounds, have been included under general guidelines, and in this location it is out of context. There are other examples of out of context under general guidelines, e.g. 4.9, spaciousness, and 4.10, the streetscape. In summary, the old town would be better left standalone, in my opinion. Suggested solution: start with a general discussion on the elements that create the character of residential Arrowtown, with emphasis on the old town, and include the general guidelines that flow from that. Then have a section devoted to the old town so that its guidelines remain strong and clear to owners, developers in that zone, and a separate section on the medium density residential zone and the LD residential zone. Guidelines need to allow for development, evolution of new building styles in the new town, as has happened up till now, for example, the Cribby era. The new town is distinctly different, but it's desirable in my view for there to be some connectivity with the old town. there are ways to assist with achieving connectivity and cohesion of the old and the new town, such as appropriate scale and form of buildings in all zones, i.e. avoidance of McMansions, limiting materials, and appropriate landscape treatments such as styles of landscape design, encouraging hedges and tall trees, i.e. all elements that reflect the old town. Therefore, I suggest Chapter 4 start with general goals and guidelines for both the old and new town residential areas, i.e. elements that make up the character of Arrowtown and with relevance to the whole town, and set the scene for the residential section. So I've then just listed in bullet points all of the headings of which it could apply to that. And then have an old town guidelines, which is standalone and separate, and then those bullet points would apply to that. This format would help avoid the criticism that the guidelines appear to be intent on making cottage style buildings apply to the whole town, and that is not the case. New town, so that's both the medium density residential and the low density, so there would be an introduction and general discussion there, and then follow on with redevelopment, upgrades and new subdivision, site planning and design, which includes parking and driveways, new construction, reserves and parkways, private reserves and parklands. Add in their discussion on possible styles and include that it's not the intent of guidelines to stifle the new design style. Reference the general guidelines for the landscape component applicable to the medium density residential zone and the low density residential zone, i.e. structures, trees, hedges, paving materials, rather than repeat all the way here. Effective guidelines on the low density residential zone. It was hoped that the 2016 version of the design guidelines would be able to have more effect on the low density residential zone. As much of what has been developed as could be anywhere. The question needs to be addressed, should the guidelines for the low density residential zone be enforced through district plan processes as thorough zones? To a large extent, the horse has already bolted, and the time to have done this was many years ago. However, I believe to achieve any level of cohesion does require some form of district plan process based on the experience of the 06 guidelines, otherwise they're not worth the paper they're written on. Issues not addressed and or need further work. The section on the medium density residential zone is good as far as it goes, but doesn't provide guidelines that deal with, for example, shading, which will be a real issue with closer development, and the importance of design to maximise sunlight. Stormwater, given stormwater is to ground in most areas of Arrowtown, may not be appropriate with medium density. Also, the swales and no curves and channels that feature in much of Arrowtown may not work for higher density. Parking, probably 2 vehicles minimum per house. How will vehicles be handled without being all over the road and the road verge? Consequent effect that has on grass verges. So I just don't think it's been, the medium density has been thought through adequately. And I'm leaving with that. The final bit I won't mention, but it's just typos and general comments as part of my submission. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And questions to the council staff, specifically addressing some of the issues you've raised. One common view put to us opposed to the, or a structure similar to what you've proposed would be that it would be likely to lead to more repetition and an overall more volume to the document. Is that something you would agree with, or do you disagree with that?
possibly would marginally, but I think there are ways around that. And one of my initial comments I made to council in the preliminary comments was that perhaps the way around it would be to have it broken up, and especially electronically, you know, you could only, if you wanted specific parts of the document, like for example the town centre is only of use to people who, to landowners or people interested particularly in the town centre. And possibly the same could be said of, well no, I think the residential and the whole of the residential would perhaps be one document, but perhaps the appendices could be separate as well. So I think there's ways around it. I agree that length is an issue, so I think there are ways around it. And having prepared, involved in preparing the first version, the 06 version, I can understand the difficulty of it. It's not easy.
I wasn't clear from what you just gone through with us whether you would be supportive, or you are supportive of the current proposed application of the guideline to exclude many instances of single house developments in the Newtown LDR and NDR zones, or whether you think it should apply to all development.
I did touch on that, but I think my view is that there's going to be involvement in the NDR anyway, as I understand it, and so I think I've come to the view that probably it should include the low-density residential as well. Otherwise, as I said, the guidelines are not worth anything really. They weren't successful this time around. They won't be the second time around unless there's some way of some mechanism to enforce them.
You, now I'll start again. One of the comments early on in the guideline is that it's intended to be more stringently applied in the old town core, and if you like, sort of diminishing its significance as one moves away.
Yep.
And Mr. Knott, the council's consultant and the designer, expressed a view that he thought that had been reflected in terms of the way in which guidance had been structured for the different residential zones, the historic management zone, the medium density zone, the low density zone. And he didn't think it meant when using the guideline one would have, if you like, a greater degree of tolerance for want of a better phrase, non-compliant buildings. Is that how you saw them operating, or did you?
Well, I think it is made clear in the document that that was the intention, the further you moved away, but having listened in at the public meeting that was held earlier this year, there seemed to be a lot of confusion, and it was just this feeling that they were trying to shoehole the whole town into doing a certain style, so I just don't think it works. And also, being involved with the Arrowtown Advisory Group, I'm just concerned that it's going to weaken the rules for the way it's applied for the historic management zone.
Something that's of interest to me is on that theme of how to express a clearer sense of significance or weighting in the older town.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in each of the different zones, the fish hook, if you like, to the guideline is expressed as a restriction of discretion, and then the criteria is effectively compatibility with character using the guideline. Variations on that kind of structure. But it's pretty clear from the plan that the intention in all of those zones is that the guideline is something to be considered, but not necessarily a fix.
Yeah.
But one thing that crossed my mind listening to you explain your concern for the old town, the historic management zone in particular, there's no requirement that that restriction of discretion is the same in each of the three zones. So it could be that in the low density zone, the guideline is a more general, consider the guideline. And in the medium density zone, it could be, should generally be consistent with the guideline. And in the historic management zone, it could be, should comply unless there are outstanding reasons not to. Or, you know, I mean, there could be a differentiation of weightings in the plan itself that instruct users how much importance the guideline should have. Is that the kind of approach you think could help reinforce the importance of the option?
It could. I'm not ruling that out. It depends how it's done, and also I just feel particularly Chapter 4 is particularly sort of confusing and a bit muddled, and it's just because it's been kind of cobbled together. You know, maybe it needs to be completely rehashed. I'm not sure, but something that doesn't work.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
I think your hand in terms of whether you would like to do a brief summary of my evidence or if you'd like to.
It's a very important one.
I didn't meet you only 2 weeks ago, so you just want to just focus on that a little bit. Okay, so I'll go very, very fast. My evidence, because my evidence was confined to a consideration of the way the design guidelines apply to the existing Harrisdale fire station and any upgrading or rebuilding of that site. My evidence concludes that the guideline in conjunction with amendments to the Chapter 10 rules and the proposed ban, not an amendment. The guidelines and the Chapter 10 rules have the effect of potentially preventing any redevelopment of that site, and this is because the operational functional needs of fire station not really being able to achieve the outcomes sought in the guidelines. Those sort of things are things like the scale of the building necessary to accommodate fire engines, the need for fire engines to have hard sand areas, wide crossing places, and those kinds of things.
I have 60% of the front.
Those technical requirements are constrained even further by the shape and size of the existing site as well. In my view, this hesitation on complying resource consent under the proposed plan, notwithstanding what I've said in evidence in relation to the Chapter 10 rules. And then that brings us to a Section 104D test, which can, when you consider the policy of ensuring that the outcomes in the design guide are achieved, really provides some level of vulnerability to any redevelopment to the Arrowtown fire station, and it's my conclusion that that's not giving effect to the policies when in fact they need to be given effect to in the RPS that require emergency services to be enabled and the protection of the functional and operational needs of emergency services. So it is for that reason that I've concluded that there should be some site-specific amendments to both the design guidelines and also a consequential amendment to the master discretion I've suggested in my evidence in relation to the Chapter 10 rules, so that there's a clear connection to the design guides for that site, but not necessarily that non-complying 104D test, and there's anticipation that redeveloping that site wouldn't be able to achieve the outcomes that may be appropriate for a residential site in Harrisdale.
Now, Mr. Bryce has said in his summary of evidence that he is happy with, in large part, with your suggested amendments to the guidelines, a subtle change to what is on the last page of the evidence, the amendment to 429.1.1. Had a chance to look at it.
No, there was a chance to hear a recording or see anything this morning.
Oh,
yes.
Mr. Price, I'll give you a copy. Are you happy with that?
It's subtle. The reality is that at fire station, it would be necessary to depart from the guidelines for a fire station to be rebuilt on that site, because the form of the building could have been achieved. But I accept that amendment.
Okay. Any questions?
My only question really is, even using a restricted discretionary route, are you still confident that the restrictions of discretion themselves keep the pathway you need open? And I'm reflecting now on some observations that were made by the independent hearing panel in Auckland, and they felt the need to include restrictions of discretion, things like the positive effects of the activity, the community well-being benefits of the activity, so that the reasons why we need to have things like fire stations could actually be put on the table in the consideration of the RDA itself. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is just, are you absolutely comfortable that the RDA route, while I can understand it's less risk than a non-compliant activity, is sufficiently structured so that all the justifications why the fire service might argue it shouldn't have to comply with some normal expectations can actually make it onto the table?
Yes, well, the RD rule that I've proposed does include that the functional and operational requirements, the community safety aspect, which is underpinned by the fire services role in the Fire Service Act. So I think the capture, and I also think the importance of the amendment to the guidelines is really important, recognising that on that site the fire service has been there forever in whatever form. Yeah.
Okay, that was my question.
No, I think that's clarified at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another easy day for Mr. McIntosh.
Thank you. And in that case, I will adjourn the hearing until Monday, 28th of November, at 10 a.m.